This is Matt.
This is Paul.
This is Jacob.
And we are Matt and Manly's Ice Cream Social. You are listening to Seven Land Hand.
It's Seven Land Hand.
Woo!
Brought to you by Good Games Cannington.
And Rockingham.
An oil lantern, a sister of pleasure, green sleeves, and a cup of Earl Grey. That's what I call a Friday night, listener. And you could too. It's all starting to sound a little bit like Arcadia Quest. A game with more minis shoved into a box than a 1970s British Leyland factory. A board game so bawdy there's 18 of them. An adventure with so many potions and lecherous trolls, you'll think you're at a Myers perfume counter. This one's big and good. This is Seven Land Hand. Arcadia Quest. It's a Fisher-Price RPG for 2 to 4 players, designed by a formula of mathematical madmen, namely Tiago Aranha, Guilherme Guilherme, and our old friend Eric M. Lang and Fred Perrett. This appears to be Tiago, Guilherme and Fred's first game as lead designers. However, we all heard about Eric M. Lang in episode 34, XCOM, where we established that he may indeed have several heads. This is a cool mini or not product, so Kickstarter supporters of this game should be getting their copies by Christmas, 2016. The game's elevator pitch reads, in Arcadia Quest, players lead guilds of intrepid heroes on an epic campaign to dethrone the Vampire Lord and reclaim the mighty Arcadia for their own. But only one guild may lead in the end. So players must battle against each other, as well as against the monstrous occupying forces. Through the branching scenarios of the campaign, the heroes gain awesome new weapons and abilities, and the game remembers the heroic deeds of players from one session to the next, unlocking exciting new possibilities in future scenarios. Well, one disclaimer. Before we proceed, only one of the gentlemen named above may actually be a mathematical madman. But what does it all mean to gamers? Chewing attack dice and spitting out crits, I have with me today Schmetterling Matt McHale.
Hello!
An empty chair where Raleigh Everts used to be. Silence. And the hammer beast man himself, Justin Edwards.
What I'm about, hammering beasts.
Hammer the beast man, hammer the beast.
Oh yeah. Man, that was good fun.
Yeah. How are we, gentlemen? What's been happening?
Man, it's been a pretty huge week.
Huge week.
Huge week.
We haven't been in the studio for...
Studio, yeah.
A studio, man. That's what are you talking about? Professionals. Studio.
That's where we are. Yeah, in the studio. Purpose built just for Seven Land Hand. Yeah.
We did like a half step with the interview last pod, I guess. Yeah. That was really nice. And,
fairly nice.
This is like the first time Raleigh hasn't been sitting there, hey?
Is this the first time Raleigh?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, the first one without him.
We dodged. We couldn't do it. Like, no, we just like, I'm going to get this interview in there, get the film, let's go.
We couldn't handle it without Raleigh. Yeah.
We'd like him to believe it's because of, we were in mourning.
Panic.
Yeah, that's it.
Fear, panic.
Immigration, folks.
Yeah, we've been quizzing him up about Arcadia Quest via Messenger, so we've got all his points of view. we've got no opinion. We'll just keep saying what he said.
There's ducks in the lake. Yeah. That's all I got.
So what's been, you say it's a big week, been a big week.
For me personally, just a bit of tech stuff cracking. Metal Gear Solid 5 came out on the 2nd of September. And
that's the Phantom Pain?
The Phantom Pain.
Right.
Yeah. There's a bunch of stuff. It's crazy. So most of the Metal Gear Solid games are quite linear. So there's a story to be told. It happens in this particular way.
Have they gone open world Metal Gear Solid?
They've gone open world Metal Gear Solid, and it's incredible.
Oh,
it's
nice.
The best thing. The cool stuff about this
is... So you can just go kick off a mission somewhere, even if there isn't a mission happening there.
Exactly. So you sort of jump in a helicopter, you're like, all right, so what can I do?
I've got to go do my shopping.
Yeah. shopping with a balloon. And here's her, like, crazy. Jump in a helicopter, you're like, all right, cool, I want to go... Ah, look, there's an armored unit out here. They've got machine guns and stuff. Got to go sort them out. Fly close by so you don't get shot down, obviously.
Yeah.
Jump out, you're like, right, crank out your handy-dandy binoculars, look at this dude, and he's like, all right, well, he's pretty good at killing stuff. He's also pretty good at... He's got a medical degree by the looks of it. Okay, I think I might...
By the looks of it.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You can tell that with it.
What a binoculars. Wow.
He's binoculars, man. So, he's like, all right, that guy's cool, we're not going to kill him. But this other scrub over here, he's got E grades and everything. He's just did really bad at school. He's going down.
Oh, so E-grade people can die and medical...
Because you're taking them home to mother base, right?
Right.
So,
are you talking about PvP?
No, there is an element of that as well. It's just nuts. So you walk up, this stealth up there, you sort of crawl around, and you're like, okay, this guy's gone. You sort of choke him out. Maybe ask him, just get it behind him, choke him out. His mate's sort of not even looking. You just pull the piss out, just cap that E-grade guy. And then you fix a balloon to the guy.
Yeah.
And he just fully inflates, yeah. And he just goes straight up into the air and disappears. He's picked up by aircraft in, like, high atmosphere, taken back to Mother Base.
Right.
And then you go back to base, and there's that dude that you choked out and, like, strapped a balloon to, and he's like, yo, what's up, boss? You know, it's really good to see you, you know, like... He's been brainwashed to work for you now. It's great.
It's a mad concept. It's
recruitment by balloon.
Yeah, it's insanity. So that's taken up some of my time.
Choking stupid guys out. You don't want to take anyone with a degree down. No, that's what we've learned from that.
When I say choking out, you're knocking them out. You're stunning
them. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You can't take them live. You know,
it was more the IQ test that you gave them before you took them down. That's crazy. What I'm worried about. So you want the stupid guys on your team?
You don't want the stupid guys on your team. Oh, okay. Right? I'm lying. They're just not going to do a good job. No. Some of them are sick. Some of them are violent. It actually states, like,
okay.
You know, they're not good at
it. With those fancy binoculars.
Exactly. They're great. No. The other thing that happened, I guess, today, if you're in Studio Land.
What date is it today?
Technically, it's the 10th.
The 10th of September.
Yeah, but this will be going up on the 13th, and a bit later.
Oh, a bit later than that.
The Apple press conference happened today. This is an interesting thing for gamers, I guess. The Apple TV was announced, and this hasn't happened for a few years. They've sort of
an upgrade on that.
An upgrade.
Yeah. Very big upgrade on the Apple TV. They've sort of built it around the same sort of system the phones run on. And I'm a recent convert to the phones. I think they're pretty good. I used to be one of those, like, nerds that are like, no, fuck Apple, man. They're the worst.
Apples and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, no sheeple device. Duh, you know, stuff like that.
pretty box. Fuck all. Does fuck all.
Yeah, pretty much. And then I got one thrown at me for work, and it's actually been really great. But, yeah, the TV's built around the same system as the phones are. So the apps are available.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you guys play Crossy Road. Like maybe your fallout shelters.
You've just opened that.
Yeah.
That opened that tin of worms. So Matt can't shut up now. He's wriggling to say something.
There's a massive potential there for, and a bunch of developers have already said, yep, we're doing it. Guys like Disney, guys that develop Rock Band, Harmonix, stuff like that. They're like, yep, we're in. Like, we're going to be developing bits and pieces for this Apple TV thing.
Right.
And the controller it comes with is touch sensitive and all that sort of jazz. So that's kind of cool, as well as doing all the cool TV stuff like your Netflix and all your stuff that's not allowed in Australia, apparently.
So what? Yeah. It sounds like it's a console, but not a console.
It's like a half step.
I have no concept of what it is either. Really,
it's just a box that you stick in the entertainment unit, and cool stuff happens.
Yeah. So it's like what the Xbox does, like being a media center, but it's trying to do it properly.
Yeah, if you like the way Apple do things more than maybe your Xbox or
This is the Apple response to the Microsoft Xbox or Xbox.
Just that media side of doing things. I don't think they're really trying to bring gaming to the market. They're not going to be like.
What I was saying. You said this is important. This is exciting for gamers, but I'm like, I've never thought of gaming and Apple ever, I don't think.
Well, it's just, you find that a lot of, like, your full console experiences, you need to set time aside for, you know, in my evenings, it's like, all right, cool, let's play some games. But when I'm commuting, when I'm on lunch, stuff like that.
But you're not taking your Apple TV with you for a
start. No, you're taking your phone, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you're really into whatever's happening on this device and you kind of want to show that off or you want to keep that going, you just crank open this Apple TV. You know, it's all linked up on
Game Center. So you'll get the phone app version of what's happening on TV.
You can get these hand-size experiences now blown up on TV, and I think that's kind of exciting. But yeah, it's always good to see new technology in that kind of space.
Yeah, sure.
But this is
cool. It'd be good if it works. I mean, my experience with Apple's not been great, and I'm just, everything's problematic for me. You know, I'm starting to feel the pain of age. Wow. I'm just starting to think any kind of electronic device that I'm buying is going to be hard work from now on.
Damn.
Yeah, I got a new amp not too long ago, and the guy in the shop went, "This is great. It's got this, that, and the other." And then he said, "The setup screen is pretty basic." And I was like, "You got me now, buddy. Man. That's what I want to hear."
Really? Basic. That's a positive. Okay.
And then when I booted it up, it seriously looked like a 1970s computer type of thing. It looked like I was back at high school. Well, back at high school, it was in the 80s for me. Yeah. But it looked like that monochrome, you know, black screen, white writing. It was really bad. And I thought, man, he didn't undersell it. This is really basic. But I was happy with that. Plug in the microphone, tell it where all the speakers are. Boom, it was done. Oh, walk away.
Oh, excellent.
That's good. That's what
someone in that field really likes hearing, is that someone got what they wanted to do without freaking out, right?
Yeah. because I get depressed if it goes, this does like a million things, and I'm about three things into that million, and I'm going, I've had enough of this. Yeah. I can't handle the paper. And then from then on, I'm just going, yeah, that amp over there is good, but I'm only using three things. It can do a million, but I don't understand them all. You know? Well,
that just shows that, you know, there are things out there for every level of user. You know?
See, I'm starting to think that if I was in Justin's game of Metal Gear Solid, he'd be choking me out and sending me up in a balloon. got this guy here.
No, you got the opposite, man. You'd be shot in the head. You'd be put out execution style.
Matt, what have you got?
well, with Battle of Zendikar, coming up, I'm getting my magic interest.
Yeah, we've got to do the table, don't we? Again, we've got to do a drafting table and get us some skills together. Yeah. Every so often we do this, don't we? And
yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
It's fine. Look, I won the last one. Oh no, that was our little pack wars. I won that. So, I was happy about that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But I've decided
Zendikar's looking great.
It looks well. This is what's getting me inspired about it. It looks so good, and the full art lands,
yeah,
pretty incentive. I went back to my collection. I got all of my cards out the other week, and literally they're occupying my table in the back room, and it's. I didn't realize I had so many. I got thousands of the bloody things, which is ridiculous, you know. And it's just because I got heavily into the Theros block, so I was collecting a lot of cards there. So I've got multiples of all these pauper cards, commons and uncommons or whatever. So I set myself another ridiculous challenge that I was going to probably end up not completing. But anyway,
nice.
That's what you want. Set myself goals that I'm not going to complete. So I'm going to.
I can do that.
Definition of existence, right?
Yeah.
So I'm working on creating a modern deck because I've got everything I've got now is no longer in standard. It's no longer standard legal.
You need to speak to Rob. And
so there, I need
Riley
to get some advice. So I decided, what's my starting point? What's my jump in? So I've decided to go for a Boros aggro pauper just to start.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm going to use as my base to build on. So
have you looked online at what the decks that do are?
I did. The top eight. And I found one that I could buy the whole deck for $1,800. And I was like, wow,
that's not going to happen.
Realistically, come back down.
Yeah.
So I've got some sort of.
Rob was talking to a guy who was setting up cards. He said that it was like $120, $130 or something decks. I don't know.
You can get cheaper than that. This red deck wins for like $40.
That's just burn the shit out of something.
So I'm not looking at being ultra competitive or anything, but I am looking at getting in there, getting involved, and up. I don't know, leveling up my deck.
Yeah.
Because I think the other scary part of modern is learning what all other decks are about. So someone comes in with an archetypal deck, you're going, that's what that guy's going to do. Therefore, this is my strategy against this guy.
Yeah.
And so there's a whole bunch of learning there. So just getting in there, even with like your $40 burn deck or this $100 blue cheap control, mm-hmm. whatever it is, that gets you in there playing games and learning what decks are about.
Well, Boros aggro is what it gets thrown around a lot. It's fairly common, I guess. So.
Not a fast stretch from the white, where you just like, they have some from the red deck where you just, all you're thinking is just attack with everything and burn everything that they've got and just keep pushing it. If you haven't won by level, by turn four or five,
you're going to get creamed,
then
probably.
That's it, you've lost. Yeah. So you might as well just
so it's a very quick game. It's not a late game thing. It's a very early game.
That's what I got on Magic Jewels. I was trying to get coin. You get 20 coins per win. You get 150 coins to get a booster pack of six cards, depressingly.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to build my collection. I don't want to put any real money into it. And Amidax was going, yeah, man, I can't believe I have to churn out an hour of play to get enough money to buy a booster pack. And I'm thinking, how's he doing it in an hour?
That's
because I was playing this blue-black deck, which I'm just milling them. So I'm milling everybody down for a victory.
Yep.
I'm thinking, how's Amidax winning in an hour? Probably a red burn deck, right? Red burn. So now I'm just playing red burn. It's burning the crap out of them. And
that's where I'm cutting my teeth on Magic Jewels. But hopefully I'm going to get involved. And if we do a draft, Battle of Zendikar, when that starts, I'll jump into that.
Yeah, we'll do that.
You reminded me, Justin, of the fat packs. And the reason why I get the fat packs is, A, all those sweet art full art lands that are coming out.
Oh,
that's and
so
also
good.
Is to get the box to keep all the bloody things in because otherwise you end up with shoe boxes full of cards, which is
I got two fat pack boxes for each set since about 2013 or something like that. It's the only way to keep them.
No, I unloaded. I had like, you know, I think everyone's got one of these in the house, and that's the IKEA Expedit shelving. So I had like the 8 box
that's
of that.
That's a gamer staple.
And like 3 of those.
Those fat pack boxes fit in perfectly into those those cubes.
I had 3 of those cubes just loaded with cards. And they'd just go in there and they were gone. They were dead. Like they'll just never come back out of that box. I wanted to put like my computer in there or something. So I just took them out and then just donated them to Bloke down at Rockingham. I was like, here you go.
Oh, man.
You'd have these. And he was pretty chuffed.
Yeah.
When
you're your first player, you get bulk cards, you just think, this is the greatest day of my life.
I can't control it. Like, opening booster packs, there's something about it. There's this crack in the pool or something. It's so ridiculous.
Good. I know how excited you get about Buster Booster on the other podcast. Yeah. It's going, we can open anything. We've opened one, I think, one good card that the guys have been totally rapt about. It's about ever.
Still,
For the rare or mythic rares, there's been plenty of good drafted cards in there.
I find I'm right there with you, though, when you do that. And just listening in the car on the way to school or the way home. And as you're busting a booster, it's
kind of
I'm listening to the information.
Up,
I'm listening to you. Because you talk about the art of the card.
Not information
about,
from me.
you talk about the art of the card.
Yeah.
And then you've got the flavor text, which you usually read. And then Aaron and Rob get into the actual mechanics of the card.
Yeah,
and then you have that discussion about how it's useful. Is it shit? Is it good? Is it bomb?
Welcome, listener, to our in-show advert for ourselves.
Yeah.
I'm still
I'm
still trying to get them to believe that... Well, I'm still trying to get them, as in people that know the game, that Fairy Miscreant is a good card, which it's not. But I'm determined to convince them that it is, but it's not. I'll keep that battle burning.
So that's it. That's pretty much me. I did break out Mice and Mystics for a bit because tabletop, they played it recently.
Yeah.
So I just decided to go Han Solo on Mice and Mystics. And as soon as Battle of Zendikar came on my horizon, Mice and Mystics went back in the box. And now I'm all about Magic.
Hey, well, guys, instead of being about Magic, today's all about Arcadia Quest.
Yes.
This is a good one, so we should just blob and do a bit of that, hey, because this one's pretty good.
I think we should get right into it.
Let's get right into it. Hey, do you want to play us a blob there, Justin? Crank out the guitar, man. I'll do this one I prepared earlier. Hey, welcome back. It's Arcadia Quest time.
Yes.
All right, big box, lots of stuff in it. First of all, Matt, what is the narrative of this game?
Well, Arcadia Quest, Arcadia is this realm, land that was created for... It's got a whole backstory where there was an ancient race and they were the top of the food chain, so to speak, and then there was two realms. So there was a day and there was a night realm. And then what happened is they started to fuse. And so as soon the day and night joined together, so you would have day and night in the same cycle. It's all very confusing, actually. And
that upset people.
So people were always in the daylight, and one group was always in the nighttime.
I bet the nighttime ones were the orcs and the
that
trolls.
Sort of, yeah, that's it. That's exactly right. So like they started to get unhappy with the situation where they were blending. Yeah. And then what led to is a war between the night forces against the day forces, and there was a overthrow of power, which led to Lord Fang seizing control.
Yeah,
and so now it's all about the I don't know if you call it the resistance attempting to take back what was initially theirs and return themselves to the seat of power.
Taking part within Arcadia, which is essentially a town, right?
It's Arcadia is a city. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
So, and the way they do that, they're guilds. Everybody's a competing guild, vying for control. So they're all, in a sense, have a common purpose, working together to overthrow Lord Fang and his minions. However, only one, as we all know, only one
guild
group
or player
can actually rule Arcadia. So. We're vying for control as players, as guilds, And whoever wins ultimately is the one that will rule the seat of power in Arcadia. So with everybody else, I guess, being...
Minions,
lords, becoming minor lords, that sort of thing, you know, positions of power.
So that's the backdrop for it. Basically, what have you got to do to get your guild to the top of the pile, Justin?
Kill everybody.
Well, what's this PvPvE thing for?
So player versus environment, PvE, and player versus player, PvP. This is one of the first board games in this style I've come across where you've been actively encouraged to kill the other people at the table. Obviously, like, this is quite common for heaps of other board games. Like, you know, the whole point of the game is you need to make sure this guy dies or he fails at what he's trying to achieve. So player versus player in this game, it takes the shape of your guild, which you adopt as a part of the narrative, trying to wipe out the other guild in order for you to achieve the objective, or as a part of achieving the objectives that are laid out.
Because you've usually got a couple of objective cards which you've got to achieve. First person of three. Is it three in every scenario?
It depends on the number of players. Right, mostly it's three.
Yeah, so if you achieve three of those cards, the achievements of what's written on those three cards, then you are the winner for that game, for that scenario.
One of the conditions being that you must complete one PDE as well as...
So you can't just avoid killing other people.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Has to happen. War as hell.
Yeah. So this is one of the games where I said they've done that really well, introduce the PvP into the PvE game. So you've got both coexisting together. This is a great example of that.
The flavour of it, I mean, I made mention to it in the intro of Arcadia Quest being a Fisher-Price RPG. Stole that off Justin, so to speak. What did you call it, Justin?
I was misquoted. As saying Fisher and Paykel, which make amazing dishwashers, by the way.
We love Fisher and Paykel, and all of our friends at Fisher and Paykel listen in.
They actually keep me alive.
We knew what you meant. Mm. And so it's kind of like that, isn't it? The flavour is it's heavy RPG, but with a Fisher and Price feel.
See, it's hard.
Fisher and Pricel.
Yeah, that's it.
Feel. So the miniatures are kind of fun and... larger featured, aren't they?
Yeah, whole box is it's engaging.
The whole box is fun. Like you're saying, I think it can be as heavy. The RPG elements can be as heavy as you want them to be. So you could be serious. You could actually role play your turns, like I did sometimes, or you could.
You did? No, you did. Yeah. You did. I meant to say you did, Justin.
What?
Wrong. That's what I heard a lot of.
Yeah, you could. So you can be as heavy or as easy on it as you want, and it's a really good introductory thing. So everything in that box is so fun and so vibrant, and everything's super colourful. The miniatures are not, but that can change depending on how creative you are. Everything's super pretty, so it's a lot easier to take in and. Yeah.
And it's not just this. Who was saying something about, you know, that HeroQuest/Space Quest game from back in the late 80s, early 90s?
Right.
It's like that could be in the ancestral chain to this game, but it's way beyond that, isn't it? It's not as simplistic as that.
You had nowhere near the customization in those games as what you do with Arcadia Quest. That's for sure.
You would have been three. Mm. All right, well, moving on from that. What do we get in the box then? I mean, let's set the stage a little bit. You know, I mean, it's cool mini or not, so there's a crap load of miniatures.
Yeah, and there's a precedent there, so as soon as you mention that name, it's got to be good stuff. Yeah. Can anyone at this table give me a bad cool mini or not product? Really? No.
Let's get into that later.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah. Wow.
Let's get into that later, okay?
Depends what you mean by experience/product.
The product. So everything coming out of that box is really well put together. You've got really sturdy, well...
Good cardstock.
The cardstock is great. Yeah. The art on it is really fantastic. And then the pinnacle...
Oh, well, I think they could have gone a little bit more hardcore with the guild logos.
Yeah.
Guild logos are a bit soft for me.
What the fuck's with the grapes? And
the grapes?
Yeah, so the red fox has his guildage is grapes for some reason.
Is it?
Yeah. The Panda Express. It.
The pandas, yeah.
See, pandas, like, you know, right. It's like, let's march into battle. All right, we need some sort of icon to, like, really rally together. Pandas? Oh, no, I think I'll just go back to selling fish at the shop.
Yeah, like, you know,
well, the pandas were green, the eagles were blue. The foxes were orange and the...
Lions were orange,
and the foxes are red.
Yeah.
So they're the four colours, each of the four guilds.
Of the wimpy-looking guilds. But moving beyond that,
you had the minis. No, I'm going to stop you there.
Okay.
What would you rather see?
Like some sort of... You know how you look... Look, I'd like Liliana, Garruk, Chandra, Jace. That, you know, a little bit of woofiness to it, but in the Arcadia theme, you know, like... You know, you have that sort of character who's got a little bit of, well, he's got someone about him. A stupid panda doesn't have anything about anyone. He's gnawing on a bit of bamboo.
But hang on. You just...
bamboo is known as the reed that bends, right?
Is it?
But the panda can eat it. So the panda can destroy the most, like...
bendy substance on them.
Exactly, right?
Right.
Yeah, I'm working for
you. Oh, so the bamboo chews back.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to run that behind. Run that across Aaron Graham Mage time.
Right.
Normally have him down doing premonitions.
See, I think bamboo is probably the strongest thing out there, really, because everyone gives, you know, bamboo is an amazing versatile product. You can build strong structure. You can build paper. It can be.
You can just get, you know, ripped out of the ground and chewed on by some lump that's sitting.
Yeah, ripped out of the ground.
Hasn't even got good camouflage.
With power. And just gnawed on, GN. Like,
the pandas is weeding the jungle, just wherever the hell I live.
Bit of a sidetrack, but yes, there are four guilds, there are four animals.
Oh, yeah.
So, Arcadia Quest.
The
like
colour's pretty cool.
In the box.
The minis. So there are a selection of hero minis, each one representing... And if you think of them like free agents or mercenaries, you then recruit them for your guild in a drafting manner, which is quite cool.
That is very cool.
And you can end up with three heroes to represent your guild. And with, I think it's 12, there are 12 in the game to start in the startup box. And each player, if there's four players, will end up with three different ones. And what's great is every time you draft, you can draft a different one. So if you end up with Grom the first time round and you see Grom's used really effectively, next time you break open the campaign, if you want Grom, then you hate draft Grom so that you can play him. Mm. And then forcing someone else to take one of the others. I really liked that because it gave diversity, it gave... that feel of customization.
And the same goes with equipment as well, because you can draft that.
That's
and
it.
Also you draft that according to who your character is as well.
Yeah.
Like, there's no point in like juicing up Grom, for example, with a whole bunch of too many magical spells or anything, because he's got no benefit for that.
That's right. But the equipment cards are, leveled equipment cards are the next major component of this game, because there are five tiers of equipment. And everybody starts with the starting item. So they're just vanilla. Everyone gets the same six or something like that cards, or similar. And then you configure
cards,
them however you like. You dole them out to your three heroes in any configuration you like. And then when you finish that campaign, out come the first level equipment. So you then go through the first levels and you spend your money, which you get coins.
Let's not get too far ahead of ourselves.
You spend your money to get coins.
Still in the box.
Yeah, leading to the coins, you get coins.
There's bad guys in the box.
And there's bad guys. Ah, the bad guys.
And I'd like to thank Andy Hayes for bringing his painted set down. And if you go back to our Facebook page, Sevenland Hand on Facebook, on the 27th of August, we put a picture up there of some of his work. It's really cool. And, I mean, these look like really cool miniatures to paint. I did ask him a bit about it. I said, you know, they look like they've got large areas to paint, and that's kind of fun, and it helps you with the shading and all that sort of stuff.
So
you can make these
recesses.
Guys look really really expertly painted.
Yeah. One thing I don't want to understate is how good these minis look. I don't know if they've actually said that these things are probably the showcase of the box.
Yeah, there's a red guy with a bag on his back full of bones, and it was only after I've seen Andy's paint job on it that I went back and looked at mine. I could hardly believe it was the same thing, you know, because it was just like it just took it to another level, and it was cool unpainted, you know. So
The characters are done up in a very cartoon style, I'll say.
Yeah.
Again, the game doesn't take itself very seriously.
It's not overly anime, but it's heading towards that kind of feel.
They represent all of the typical fantasy tropes, you know.
Yeah.
Your warriors, your mages, your rangers. Yeah, that
barbarians,
sort of thing. Yeah. And then
bucks and wenches.
You've got the goblins, orcs, trolls, minotaurs, vampires. Who are round
pain and pleasure?
Yeah, who round out the miniatures, and then you've got the dice, and the dice are all custom symbol.
Yeah,
and that's your mechanic. Then there are also the player boards for each of the guilds. So it's very neat.
And
it's very organized. Very organized. So the player boards for each of the guilds, and then there's penalties for death. So you get a deck of cards that give you effects. That's because it's that kind of game. You're so excited about it. You just want to dive into how to play because it's not difficult.
Well, if we're moving into the how to play bit, I think you've got to consider setup. And we did actually measure the amount of time we went from cracking the box to playing our first game. And what was it? It was something like 40 or 50 minutes. That includes something like Matt was on the instructions. We were setting up the board. We're finding our way through everything, popping everything out of the box. We were playing within that time, which isn't too bad.
And so just to stress, that's from first crack.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
That's like knowing nothing about the game other than it's called Arcadia Quest.
Cellophane still on top, on outside the box. We know nothing about it.
Yeah, and by the end of it, it was really like a probably 20-minute process once you sort of got the fluidity down.
Yeah.
Well, if you're diving into setup, then there's two more components which you need to talk about. The game boards.
We're getting critiqued here, Justin.
The game boards.
The game boards.
Dual-sided, and there's 9 of them. So there's 18 potential boards, as you said. And then there's tokens to go on that. So there's doorways, open doorways, closed doorways, portals. There's loot tokens. There's
exploration
tokens. Yep. There's the spawn tokens. Yep. So there's a lot in this box for the cost of the game. You it's content heavy.
Meadax, who we'll get back to later on because he's posted a question at least for later. Said I think he referenced that his thumbs were a little bit sore after he popped all of, but
the punch boards. Yeah,
he doesn't have.
Robust
thumbs.
There we go.
He's very unrobust when it's thumbing.
He's probably got shuffling fingers. Shuffling
he does.
Thumbs.
He has excellent shuffling fingers. Very poor robustness when it comes to thumbs.
So what we're getting across is everything in the box. It looks good. It's high quality.
Yeah,
it's,
Don't worry about that. I mean, you're paying. It's a high-priced game, but you're getting good stuff, so you don't have to worry about that so much.
You also get the rule book, and then there's a campaign book.
Rule book?
Yeah.
Damn, son. I thought, like, go to the other store, call the other guy, order that rule book in.
Hey,
pretty hard to get out of the box.
How good was the rule book, though? This has got an index in it that actually works. You know, whatever you intuitively think, oh, I need to find out about bleh, you look in the index and it has bleh written there.
So on a scale of 1 being legendary villains rule book and 10 being, well, it's like the next best one we've probably come across.
Oh, man, that's a big question.
This is the best one.
Yeah,
this one's pretty good.
Yeah.
So, the full index at the back, straight up. We're talking about setup, moving into how this game works.
Yeah.
Start with the campaign book.
Yeah, you can play it in a multiple amount of ways. So, you know, you got your friends over, you're trying to sell them on this D&D RPG stuff. You're like, hold on. Hold on. Shut up.
Right.
It's pen and paper RPG?
Take us in your living room, Justin. This is how you speak with your friends. Good. Shut up. Sit down.
He's like, you've met what I've He's like, shut up.
Why the fuck do I come around Justin's house? I could have been at home by myself doing nothing.
What the hell am I here?
Oh, man. I've got to listen to this for 20 minutes.
So you sit him down and you could just do one mission, right?
Yeah.
Be like, okay, cool. We're in this castle. We're going to... You need to get these chests. They contain this stuff. And if you get it first, you get this shield, right?
Yeah.
We can just do
that. And you can decide on the level. Hmm. If they're kind of okay at gaming, you can just pick a level and then you can level up all the monsters, level up all your gear, and still draft in your players. Boom, you're there just for a one-off. That's good fun.
Yep. Or you've sold people. Like, you've played the first game. They're like, damn, Justin.
I can't believe you own a game that's cool, Justin.
I'm just they're reaching for their wallets, pulling out handfuls of cash. Like,
I'm moving into your spare bedroom, Justin. I want to live in a house where a game like this exists. This is the greatest day of my life.
Exactly.
I want to do this every night.
So right, you just like populate your veranda with cardboard boxes. It's
all your friends are sleeping in it. Just want to play Arcadia Quest. Yeah, go. What happens next?
You can play a full campaign, which we tried to do over the course of the month, right?
Yeah,
I think everyone,
we were pretty successful.
Yeah, we did really well.
Matt had to real role play.
Yeah, for one night a week.
Don't hold that against me.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff. But yeah, so you can pick one of your two game modes. You can opt to draft, which I think is really fun. Or maybe old mate picks up Grom because he's the best. I definitely want to use this guy, and like you can maybe if you want to cut down on time and you don't do the draft, you just pick what you want to use and go to town. It's very, very versatile in how you want to actually play this.
There would be a stress thing there if you've got someone brand new to the game and you got two or three players sitting who played before.
Yeah. Oh, you
that,
go for
that
random.
New player is, you'd have to randomize it. Otherwise, that new player is going to end up with all the cack
you
characters.
See, you think, random you think allocation. It all wrong, man. You butter up that new guy. You give him the good stuff. It's man, you could have a really good game. Use this chick. Use this guy. Here's this one. Have
this
these cards.
This is your equipment. Yeah.
Here you go. Just go to town.
Yeah.
It's like, that's really cool.
Sounds like you're all about the experience, Justin. You know, have a good time playing this game.
You want people to have a good time, right? You don't want to be a Matthew McHale and be like, you know what?
That's right.
I've got to slaughter your whole family on this board, son. I wish you never came in here.
I did play the prick, yeah.
We can't even use the 2A tile anymore. He just destroyed that. It was terrible.
He's like, better give me a blood type, man, because the ambulance is going to need it. Like, thanks, buddy.
The spittle coming out of his mouth when he made that speech has destroyed several tiles. Yeah. They're just all water damaged now. No. It's terrible.
So once you've decided you want to play a campaign and you just want to play a one-off, you delve into this campaign book. And it's tongue-in-cheek. It's really colourful language. It's simple. And it's like, your party's now in this place. A
couple
like,
of gags in every single
proper gags. Intro.
It doesn't take itself too seriously, which is a good book.
Yeah, and it sets the scene really well for what you're about to undertake. And then it goes into the technical rule setting. And that's part of the setup.
Yeah.
So it tells you that here are your objectives that are going to be placed on the board. Here's where they need to go. There's going to be four portals in this game. Here's where they go. It's all mud maps
this
right
is the
there.
Tiles and stuff. It's very easy to set up. And yeah, well, we had no problem like one person reading through the rules whilst the other person sort of looked across the table at the map chart and what everything needed to be. And it was easy done.
So
easy setup.
If you know what's up, you spend about 20 minutes getting that all done. And then before you, without much effort at all, you've got a dungeon. Bam. Like, this is the kind of stuff that people are buying third-party equipment for to make D&D dungeons. They're going out there and they're getting all the crazy floorboards and all that sort of stuff to make, you know, unique sort of dungeon sets. But you've got one in this box and it looks really good. You've got miniatures that all look great. They're all uniform. You're not pulling out, like, D&D 3.5 Green Dragon and, like, Pathfinder shit or orcs or whatever.
No, it's all uniform.
It's all looking really, really good. And that's what you're presented with. So you've pulled it out of the box, taken 20 minutes. You've picked a scenario. You've picked your team, which I guess we should talk about. And you're good to go.
No. All right, so what do you mean by picking your team? Okay. What are you looking for?
Yeah, so the cards, there's a few decks of cards. You've got a deck of equipment cards, which is armor, weapons, and spells. You've got a deck of death cards, which aren't used until, obviously, you die. You've got a deck of character cards. Now, these are pretty simple. This sort of has a few stats. How much health this particular character has. What the character's name is, very important.
Their archetype,
because that's what you want to. That's why you want to yell when you're.
Their archetype, so all that sort of, and their mechanic. So every single character has got a different mechanic. So
most of them do. Some of them just have high defense, and like one of them.
Oh, a bit of flavor text, right? That was one or two.
Yeah, she just has flavor. The unstoppable force meets something or other, but a movable object.
Oh, no,
or something
on the character cards, I think everyone's got their own mechanic.
There was an exception. Yeah, you're right. So there was one of the female characters is just this kick-ass flavor text and no roll because she's so beefed up. She has extra health and
four defense.
So she's a really tough character.
Yeah,
but the toughest one in terms of stats. Whereas all the others might be a little bit weaker in defense or a little bit weaker, lower in health, but then they have some effect on the game. Grom's a good example of that. He's got low defense, high health. But then his effect is that if he gets wounded, he does extra damage. So
extra attack dice. You take these character cards and you shuffle them up, distribute them out, and you have a 3-card draft. So pick one, pass it. With 4 players anyway. So you've got yourself a team, a 3-man team. That's your guild. Either for this scenario or for the entire campaign, depending on how you went out. I got really lucky. I got the guy we've been talking about this entire time. His name's Grom. He's not the most powerful, as we've learnt recently, but he's super cool. I also got Johan, which is a sword fighter, but has the ability to throw them. So he gets sick of stabbing people. He's like, nah, stuff this, and he'll just peg it, because there's 2 different types of attacks. There's ranged and melee.
Yep.
The third guy was Spike. Anyone familiar with Diablo 3 or any other
where he's from.
Top-down thing? He's not from there, but His mechanic is...
Being Scottish, I believe. Yeah.
His mechanic is when defending against attacks, if he rolls a particular way, a critical dice, he will damage that opponent who's attacked him. So spiky armor. That's why he's called Spike.
Fresh in on the Facebook page. We posted this before this. Anybody who's got comments about this game, please get in touch. Of course, Tim, the tiny bird wren, Meadax, the Meadax, has got in touch. And he said that Zazu, and that's how he spelt it, but Zazu is OP in terms of overpowered, not original post. Zazu has got 2 defense and 4 health, but his mechanic, which is a good example of what mechanics are, does not exhaust an attack card when attacking a flanked target, and that's a target with at least one of the enemy close to it. Yeah. Now, the board's usually set up with an orc and a goblin archer standing next to each other within close vicinity. So Zazu can heave-ho at one guy and then have another crack at him with the same attack card, and it doesn't get exhausted, which is probably something we should touch on, the exhausting of cards.
So, yeah, once you've drafted your team, you go through a similar process with drafting level-appropriate equipment, we'll call it.
Very good. Level-appropriate equipment.
Yeah, so let's say you want to take on a medium dungeon just randomly, you set the enemy. That's the thing. During setup, you pick a difficulty level.
Like started to level 6, haven't you? So,
It's all like level-appropriate. So you can say, okay, so for this battle, we're going to use level 4 stuff.
Yeah.
So you draft level 4, or you'll draft... at the beginning of the campaign, level 1 stuff.
And it is really good fun going high level. Even if you get, even if your opponents are tougher, the combos and interesting things you can do are really cool.
But you rely on those cards, on these equipment cards, to tell you how much damage you're going or how many attack dice you're going to roll, because the stats themselves on each of the heroes, they don't contain that information. There might be a little bit of a modifier on there, their individual ability, but if you've got, say, the parrying blade, which has an attack of 2... that's how many dice you're going to roll to use that weapon.
Yeah.
So that information isn't on the individual heroes cards. That's on your player board with their equipment.
And even some of the equipment, of course, has like reroll stats or extra defensive rolls and things like that, which have an ongoing effect on. Oh, look at Matt's got one of his.
I pulled up my. This is my player board from the first time we set it up.
Yeah.
And I had.
Please don't read it all out.
I had Wisp green sleeves and Scarlet.
Yeah,
and each of them, you know, they're pretty tooled out, and they had a range of starting equipment. That parrying blade is one of the starting items you get, right up to armor.
You have a ranged attack, melee attack. You have permanence, and permanence can be rings and stuff like that. It'll give you a boost or just an ongoing effect, like armor and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And
so the orc pelt is an example of a permanent armor. You're always wearing it. It always gives you a +2 to your defense. The crushing gauntlet is a boost card, which is a non-magic melee attack bonus 2 dice that allows you to, you know, when you attack. However, you can only use that once. The difference being the permanent stays face up.
Doesn't get exhausted.
Doesn't get exhausted. The boost gets exhausted. The Heart of the Phoenix is a permanent bling. It's just a necklace. Gives you +2 to your health and gives you +2 rerolls. The Night Fury is a melee attack sword.
You're going to read them all out, aren't
you? No, I'm just reading from one finger. 4 attack dice, 2 defense dice, and 2 rerolls. And that's a level 3 tier card. So there's quite a difference between the starting level and level when you get to start level 3.
Yeah, when we're talking about
exhausting
as well, like you said in there, that one stays face up or something like that. Yeah. But they don't actually have that. They give you a bag of
guild tokens.
So you, as soon as you're piece of equipment is being used, that becomes exhausted until you rest, which is essentially taking a go off, and you put one of these guild tokens on that bit of equipment so you can still see what you've got. So if you're really in that situation where you're thinking, oh man, I wish I could have that piece back again, maybe it's time to rest and then try a different strategy in the scenario you've got yourself into.
So just going on with the motions of the game, you've completed your setup, you've drafted your gear, you've got your cool looking dudes, you start the campaign, and how does that work? How does a turn work in this game?
A turn? So...
Segway.
The thing you start off with is... Well, it's done in random. Anyone can go first, really, or decide that the oldest, the handsomest, the last one to travel to some bullshit place no one's ever heard of. And then you've got one activation. So you can activate one of your 3 heroes. what you can do with that hero is you can move them or you can attack with them. And they're your options.
Three movement
is standard. Yep. Across all characters. Wisp, I say, as an example, is a difference, but
it's not
his
really.
Effect. No, it's not really. Yeah. So everyone gets three movement, and then you get the chance to attack. Now, there is a little guard mechanic, which we'll get into next.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing.
I still haven't got my head around that.
but it's not that hard.
It's probably not that hard.
That's probably the hardest thing about this game is the getting your head around the guard and the
parrying
attack.
Yeah.
So once if you're deciding to move first, you can do it in any order. So if you want to move first, you can. If you want to attack first, you can.
You just can't split your move. You can't move one attack, then run away too.
No, that's right. So moving three spots, and then if you're confronted with an enemy, if you've got a ranged weapon and they're a couple of spaces away, and ranged is line of sight, so as long as you can see your opponent, you can attack them.
Really handy little markers and get in the middle of every square so you can get your dental floss out or your ruler or whatever you use and draw a straight line. I always use dental floss.
Why not?
Yeah.
And then you can always use it once you've finished measuring.
Oh, yeah.
And then as long as you can see your target, you can have a shot at them. And you just use you're looking for bow symbols. So the dice contain three different symbols. So three?
Yep.
There's a shield.
Sword, crit, shield. Sword, crit,
and four. There's four symbols. So the bow is your ranged attack.
Yeah.
The sword is your melee attack. The shield is your defense.
So that's on the white dice.
Yeah, on the white dice.
Yeah, so you don't. That's
true. There's two. Oh, we didn't say that.
Accurate information here.
Black dice. Okay, black there's dice. Black attack dice and there's white.
Yeah.
Defense dice. Yeah, so on the black.
We should have played this game before we did this podcast.
I don't think we ever did, do we?
Well, no. 2 months we've been on this.
We did. We're too excited about it. I think we're stumbling over everything. Mm. So the black attack dice contains the sword symbol, the bow symbol, and the crit symbol.
Importantly, three melee symbols, the sword, two range symbols, and a crit symbol.
Yep. That's it.
Is that right?
Other way around.
There's more swords than bows. Oh, did I get that around? Right. So that actually influenced what equipment I took in the end, because I thought unless the bow equipment, ranged equipment, was really overpowered, I'd go with a melee attack because I knew that I'd have more chances of getting a hit.
Hmm. Well, some of your characters had natural tendencies to be better at using bow.
Because some of them were good with magic, and a lot of that is ranged attack stuff.
But so I like the fact that it's not limiting. You could choose your character, if you've got your archer, ranger character, you can still give them magic, and it didn't matter because they can still use it. They might not get the extra advantages of using a ranged weapon, but there's nothing prohibiting them from using them, those equipment.
It's especially important when you're drafting gear, because otherwise it's just going to melt down.
So back to the role.
That's a pro tip, isn't it? Think about what your character can do, or its special mechanic or influence on the game when you're getting the equipment. It's pretty obvious, but it's probably something to consider when you begin to get into it for the first time.
It's a good game, St. James. Pro tip.
St. James.
He's living in the past, man.
He's living in the past.
So getting back to the attack rolls.
Brought to you by Good Games Cannington
and Rockingham.
You've
pro
got
tip.
The black dice. Back to the attack rolls.
Oh, Matt, what
the attack
rolls. Sorry,
the attack roll. I've said it four times now. I think
the attack roll
has
not available at Subway.
Or maybe it was.
If you're rolling, say, three of them in your attack against a goblin, little goblin that's up ahead of you, and you happen to roll three sword symbols, that's three hits, melee hits you've made. If you were to roll two swords and one bow, and you're doing you're using a melee attack, that's two hits and one miss, the ranged being a miss because you're using a melee attack.
Yeah. Right? Super intuitive for anyone who's played 5 minutes of any kind of game in their life ever, really. It says that's not...
That was really obvious.
Yeah.
And then there's the crit
thing
symbol.
We kind of stuffed up at first.
We did the first game, but then we fixed that. Yep. So the crit symbol is a bonus. It counts as a hit for any type of attack, melee or ranged.
Yeah.
And however, you get to roll another dice of the same type as a bonus, and that also counts as a hit. So
which
for every crit,
expertly modeled. As soon as we realized that, he goes, yeah, you could just do this. And just, he rolled crit after crit after crit and did about 45 damage. That's probably, it did about 7. And we thought, this is going to be brilliant. And then never did that ever again, pretty much.
Never ever again.
So you're rolling against the goblin, and the goblin's got a health value of...
2
and an overkill value.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
So,
overkill.
So if you roll, in the example where I rolled 2 melee dice and 1 range dice, I've made 2 hits. The goblin's health is 2. I've effectively killed that goblin, but he gets to attack me back as like a dying.
Well, the attacks happen at the exact same time.
It's like magic, it is rolled afterwards.
Yeah, it is.
So once that's. If he hasn't been overkilled, which is usually typically 1 to 2 more health
successful,
than the health point.
Successful so rolls.
If you roll that, if you were to roll 3 hits against a goblin who has an overkill of 3, he's dead outright. No attack will come back at you.
Not even bits of him are going to attack you.
Not even bits, no. No, his arm is not going to fly off and stab you in the eye or anything like that. So if you've only rolled 2 and his health is 2, there's another attack there against you in which you must use the white dice to defend against. Mm. So your defense value, whatever
that
is.
And a lot of the creatures don't have defense dice, just the heroes do. But as soon as you get deeper into the game, you start coming across bad guys that have defense dice.
Cool.
That's it.
So just in summary of that.
Yeah.
You've picked a campaign. There are several objectives for that particular campaign, right? You've been given the opportunity to kill the other guilds that are partaking in this particular dungeon. So there's 3 of us sitting there. We've got blue guild, green guild, and orange guild. You've then given a list of mission objectives to complete this dungeon. The PvE ones we mentioned earlier are normally campaign specific. So the ones that we did were go into the alchemy lab and get the bombs, or go to the armories and get the shields, or
kill a sister of pain.
All that sort of stuff. And you can complete that. You have to complete that, or try to, in order to succeed, and complete 2 other objectives on the table. So there could be a particular boss in there. So if you slay him, you'll complete an objective.
Pick up a certain exploration.
Go to a certain area or pick up this particular item. There's exploration type chits in the box. And then you have to kill one of the other guilds. Normally, I think in order to finish this,
kill one of the characters from the other guild.
Not the whole guild. Yeah. So, in that exact same combat style that Matt, you went through in quite a bit of detail. That wasn't
you're
a
welcome.
Jab. That wasn't a jab.
You're welcome.
It wasn't a jab.
And Matt, after this, can you read out what all the equipment that your characters had again?
I
didn't quite get what. Oh,
I'll read off the numbers on all the boards as well.
Keep going, Justin.
Once you've completed.
If you're talking, Matt's not.
Right. Jeez, man. That's rough. I actually enjoyed that. So once you've completed 3 of those objectives, you've win the campaign, right?
Yeah.
So, there's... by the way...
money, right?
You might be thinking, okay, hold on. So, you start a mission, you're walking around this dungeon, it's all grid, right?
Yeah.
So, when we say 3 movement, you get to move 3 grids on the board. So, 3 squares. These 9 squares are split up into another 9.
Opening a door counts as a movement, basically an action.
There are door tiles that you flip, which are pretty cool.
Yeah, movement, action, synonymous. Yeah.
Jumping into a portal.
And I think the reason why we skipped over that so quickly is because it's so natural. Like, you don't have to think about it.
It's pretty straightforward, isn't it?
Very, very straightforward. So, you're moving about this dungeon, you're exploring, you're trying to complete these quests, and you're using the equipment, you're exhausting it. When we say exhausted, try and think of, like, your arm won't lift that sword anymore because you just belted it through an orc sort of thing.
Yeah.
You need to take a chill, you need to take a breather.
Sharpen it a bit.
Yeah. You do what's called a rest. A rest is you don't do anything on your turn and you remove all the exhaust counters.
Bring people back to life.
That's a death thing. We'll go over in a bit. Mm. So you move around your dungeon and let's say the unfortunate happens. This orc man, he just didn't want it. Eat that blade that you're trying to feed him, and he's like, "No, actually," and like rips it out
and feeds it back to you.
Yeah, feeds it back to you through your throat or whatever. Or Matt peers around a corner with his shadow stepping bullshit and just like throws an arrow through your neck or something like that.
Favorite part of the game, actually.
Yeah. Your character will die. What happens there is that the model's removed from the board, it's put onto your guild board, And you can keep playing. Like, you can activate your other two heroes.
If you don't care, you've got a job to do.
Yeah. Steer it at home. One turn is one activation. So I've got three characters. I don't move all three of them in one turn. You only move one a turn. When I say move, I mean move three spaces or move two spaces, open a door, stab one thing. I think that's really important because the turns flow quite quickly. No one's ever sitting there for 20 minutes waiting for you to figure your stuff out, you know?
Yeah,
that's true.
It flows activate really one guy, three movement, one attack in any order.
Yeah. And you can just John You're Rambo done. That stuff and just pick one guy and just tool him to the teeth. And just walk out and go stab everything. But
You rest. You unexhaust all those cards. You bring your guy back to life who can stand next to one of your other characters.
Put him back on the board next
and
to him too.
If you realize that one guy's got a piece of equipment that someone else should have, you can trade it around.
Which is super handy.
Within your guild.
Yeah. So the unfortunate happens, you cop the sword through the neck, or Matt was a jerk. And you
happens all the time. Did I say that was my favorite part of the game?
You receive a death token, another chip, another little circle that gets slid onto your guy.
Yeah.
At the end of the game, especially in a campaign mode, this is quite interesting. Now, you might be thinking, with the one and done, there is no real death. There is no real downside to it, other than it taking points away, I believe, at the end. So,
well, it impacts on you on the next campaign, the next scenario.
If you're doing a one-off.
Let's say in the people over my house scenario that we just want to do one. You just receive a token and it sort of comes off your balance at the end.
Yeah.
All this stuff...
We'll get into balance in a second.
Yeah, all this stuff is actually really, really good at being persistent. So... On every single equipment card, there is a code. They've provided these really cool, I'm going to call them like one-and-done character sheets, where you just write the code down for the card you had.
Yeah, instead of the whole card name that you can't read next time.
Exactly. So when it comes to D&D, you sort of write down the item that you have. You sort of write down a few stats that you need to reference straight away. But when it comes to a full item description, you need to whip out your player's book and flip to a certain page and all that sort of stuff. Not that it's a downside, I think. It's just a completely...
This is just a quick way of getting reloading the game for next time.
So it all comes out of the box really quickly. And the death cards that you receive at the end of a session have an impact on the way you play your game next time around.
If you draw... There's lots of no-effect cards, which is cool.
Yeah,
but
the kiss of death could be kind to you. Maybe stick a tongue in and...
Well, there's one called System Shock, which... occupies a card slot, no other effect. So you can only carry up to four items in your inventory
per character.
So if you've got the System Shock, it occupies one of those four slots. So all of a sudden, your character can only carry three items instead of four.
Yeah.
So that's a big impact.
Them pretty quick, then he's got to rest again. Otherwise, he's largely useless. Which was kind of one of Justin's points. Was it'd be good to have the standard. Abilities that these guys have, so they could at least run up to an opponent and try and choke him to death.
Yeah, like punch
even
him
if
out.
His sword and his bow are knackered and he's exhausted his boost.
Even just one and one, because the idea of someone standing in a dungeon, I get it, they're exhausted. So, but if you've triggered a bunch of orc reactions and you're just standing there because you can't do anything back, and just taking it like a champ, and just kind of.
I think you mentioned earlier on the balance. Now. So how does that work? Is you wandering around this this kind of like dungeon crawl? What are you collecting?
The point. So you made this telepathic stuff.
Yeah.
So when you're walking around there, especially we're talking more about the campaign sense now. So which is what we did, which is what we're exposed to.
You can also use what you're about to talk about in the one-offs as well, because it's kind of like who wins kind of scenario, if you want to put it down to that.
So the effects, the objectives that you achieve in a campaign, we'll call it a mission, will carry, like I said, carry on without through you.
Sounds like Metal Gear Solid talk there, I reckon.
I know, right? We'll carry on with you throughout the rest of the campaign. So like I was saying earlier, you go into the armory, you get the shield. That shield will go into your inventory and benefit in a certain way. There was a particular mission where you received a title as a reward completing the objective in a certain way. So Matt was lucky enough to get the title of the Gate Lord for next mission, which involved you had to shut the gate on a rampaging bunch of orcs running through town and chopping everyone up. So, because Matt had done so well on a previous mission, he was able to do something
had an effect on the next match.
Yeah, it had an effect on the next one, and that effect was deciding where the new monsters spawned.
Yeah, rather than rolling randomly.
Yeah, then they came into the dungeon.
So very powerful.
Very, very powerful. Mm.
Very annoying for everyone else. And I loved it.
And also, but it's not just even just like winning the whole campaign as well. There's also you get collect money along the way as well.
Yeah, so the like cash.
Turning over exploration counters can be a trap, which will give you some health damage, or it could be some money anywhere cash. From like 1 to 3 or 4 solid or something cash. Like that.
Or it could be a health potion.
Mm. Or it could be a health potion or have another turn potion, right? So there's a bonus to flipping these exploration tokens over and having a look. But you get cash at the end of the game. Mm. You count up all of this cash. You can also get cash by achieving those quests that are out there. If you're the first person to do it, boom, you get a coin.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you do it at the end of the game, if anyone else does it subsequent to that, they don't get the first person to do it coin, but they will get a coin at the end of the game just for having done it anyway.
Each of the monsters in there, they all have their own like bounty, if you like, too. So if you kill them, you get the cash reward. However, if one of those monsters kills one of your players, one of your heroes, then everybody else gets rewarded for that monster killing you.
Yes.
So there are plenty of opportunities to get
crap.
You do drop all your crap. And somebody else comes along, Justin, and steals it from you.
Mm.
Okay, but that coin at the end of the game, at the end of that scenario, you can then you get out the equipment cards and you pass them around. Now, if you've done well and you have 24, like something ridiculous, like Grom got you on the first game, Justin, and Matt and I had about 1.5 gold coins between us. We bought very little, and Justin bought everything.
Luckily, there are cards that are cost you nothing.
Yeah,
luckily, yeah.
But that's a way of tooling up your guys for next time, though, right?
I see what you're steering home. So, you walk around them, and let's say because all of the missions end when the first player completes all three objectives, and dings it, like ticks the box, and then no one else has a chance to sort of catch up on that.
No. Stops automatically.
Yeah, it's really like a case of rich gets richer, right? So in that first mission that we did, Grom, my character, walked around and just, he was a machine. He just walked up, stabbed a dude, killed him, took his money, walked up to the neck, stabbed, what's this on the ground? More money, sweet. So I was sitting on like 24 coins as a result of killing everything and completing missions and all sorts of stuff. And what happened then is that at the end of each mission, you draft a set of new equipment cards.
From the next level
up. From the next level up. So you're getting better stuff.
Yeah.
Now, the downer is that you can only pick a few, and then you have to buy them with the coins that you got. So I was set. I was like, all right, cool. I got this wicked armor, and I got this sword that's going to bust a head open, and I also got this hammer. And then you two were like, well, I've got like 4 coins, man, so I'm going to buy this ferret, and I'm also going to buy this dead turtle. I think it might be able to take care of some business. And it sort of has an impact on the thing. So it's not really a gripe. It's just more of a, maybe something to keep, maybe something to consider. The rich get richer in this game.
Yeah.
Very much so. So
they do rein you in a little bit, though, by only letting you choose 3 cards. So you can only purchase up to maximum 3.
But, you know, like I said, there were free ones, but those free ones aren't necessarily going to, set the world on fire.
That's that became a game then in itself, and that David and we were withholding the really good cards, the good stuff, if we could, and drafting it into our own hands so that you didn't get this really good stuff. Mm. I mean, I know I certainly wasn't passing on good cards because I knew I couldn't afford them. However, the things I was looking at costed 0 or 1, and he was something that was worth
like 9.
9. And I don't want Justin to buy it because I know he could afford it and it's really good. So I drafted it anyway, knowing that I can only choose 3 and the rest of them go back on the pile unseen. So, and everyone was doing the same thing. I don't know.
Yeah,
Mate, Justin, David, you weren't?
No, I think I just drafted what I could buy. I wasn't really thinking about
No, I was definitely thinking of screwing Justin over.
The honest merchant. But that was only mission 1. By like mission 3, I was back on even playing fields. It was really interesting.
Yeah.
Which is, so the game has an evolving storyline. Like I said, it's a lot of tongue-in-cheek humor about what you're doing there and all that sort of stuff.
It is fun to take the same characters onwards and upwards and face tougher guys and with a different story. And the monsters you're playing against do change as well. Like you start getting the Lord Fang's shadow starts appearing, and the Lord Fang later on, you get the Sisters of Pain and Pleasure coming. You get the big Minotaur and the Beast Houndman make an appearance. But when you're kicking off, you've just got these weeny goblins archer guys,
And that same feeling you get from a pen and paper tabletop is sort of conveyed in this, because all your miniatures look the same, the gear's changing, and you're developing a bond with this stuff that you're picking up, and like
you're leveling up.
Yeah, your party of three is getting better and better, and you're sort of really gelling with it. We played the full campaign.
Yeah, we did.
We got start to finish for the finale, which we won't go, because it's a plot driven game, right? So we're not going to be talking too much trash. There's a big boss, as you can imagine. His name's Lord Fang. That's not really much of a spoiler. But what we did for that one, because we had gotten... I'd missed one. Matt wasn't in. We had another guy sitting in and all that sort of stuff. I found this was like a really good example of how versatile this game is that we took the existing team that we had, we drafted the level-appropriate equipment that we should have had for it, and we played, and it worked.
Yeah, that's right.
It wasn't crazy, even though it was the final showdown and stuff like that. The same sort of relevance was
there. There wasn't any cogs that weren't interlocking. No. It just worked.
It wasn't
fine.
Like, well, hold on, he didn't play the last thing with the other stuff. He didn't get the key and the captain. There's nothing like that.
So,
and I think that's really, really positive. We've moated. Where are we at now? What are we talking about?
Well, just before we do expansions, I've got one pro tip. Glad bags.
Pro tip. Good games, Cannington.
Glad bags. Come well equipped with glad bags, right? That will help you with your setup.
Inbox
storage. It all fits in. It all packs away real nice. Mm-hmm. As long as you... But pro tip two. Make sure the
Good games, Cannington.
Make sure... Don't give them all the credit. It's like, this is a seven-line hand pro tip, I reckon.
Seven-line hand pro tip two.
That's trademark. Ding. Right. Get the air out of your glad bags. And then it'll fit in the bottom of your box better, right? Yeah. But yeah, after you've popped all of those chits, made your thumb sore, meat axe, pop them in a glad bag after you finish. Then when you're there next time, boom, they're already sorted out, ready to go.
If you want the super pro tip, someone else maybe.
Seven line hand, pro tip three.
All right, this is like super mega alpha, mega edition.
Yeah.
Get a hole punch.
Yeah.
Take your glad bag, fill it. This stuff, and then you've got like an air cushion.
Yeah.
Hole punch that bad boy just once, one place.
Yeah,
and then you never have to deflate another glad.
That is a good pro tip, man. Why didn't you tell me that? We've been playing this game for 2 months, and now you come out with that bit of information.
Learned it from the bank. You know, like I was emptying my piggy bank recently.
Yeah,
and I noticed that all the coin bags.
What are you going to do with that $3.25 that you put
into
your bank
account? $100.
It was 5 cent pieces.
It was just a hundred straight bones. I was pretty happy with that.
How much money have you got there, Justin? I've got 8 kilos of 5 cent pieces.
Oh, it was pretty ridiculous. But back on the game.
I've got a pro tip.
Pro tip.
Yeah, this is how serious this one is. When you're setting up your characters, your heroes, really look at the way you're configuring the equipment. Because I found a couple of times I'd tooled up one of the heroes, and then the other two I sort of didn't give much attention to. And then when it became important, as in they got in combat, I found them very lacking. You know, they either didn't have enough weapons to deal with what they were facing if they didn't kill it the first time. Be aware amongst your three characters. And you can only activate one at a time. Make sure they're a bit balanced, unless you're planning on only using one character the entire time. Make sure you've got balance across your three characters. That's my tip.
Well, part of what do you think? What I loved about this was that the miniatures' appearance matched the pictures of the cards that they had. It was very obvious who was who.
Yep.
And
but.
We'll get to that. I enjoyed the but. What did I just say? Anyway, the coloured bases that they go on clearly identify which guild. Yeah. So each miniature pops into a little coloured base, so you know which guild they're part of.
Yeah.
And Matt's butt, I think, you're referring to when you pack them up later on, getting them all into the
I was thinking to the mistakes where you were using the wrong character, thinking it was somebody else because. You know, you didn't pay that much attention.
I think that was just down to stupidity rather than... I think there's...
The lateness of the hour.
Yeah, I think I had two swordy-type characters and they were standing very close to each other and one toddled off in a direction using the other guy's skills, which is a bit of a blow for me, but yeah.
But yeah, the packing way is another thing, which you're talking about.
All right. Are there any expansions coming for this bad boy?
There are.
All right. How does this play out?
So, as we know, this was a Kickstarter game. So there were various
Christmas 2016.
there were lots of tier levels where they created, brought out extra characters and things like that. I won't go into them. There's a bucket load of them,
which makes you cry when you've played the game and enjoyed it. You want all of that now.
Then you want McHammer and Leroy and Nibbles and Pigsy.
They actually reading the internet to us again, Justin.
There was the monkey characters. You know, the monkey magic. Pigsy, the Monkey King, Sandy. They feature as characters in the game. As Kickstarter tiers. There's a integration module called Inferno, which is coming out soon.
So this is an expansion we can actually get.
Yeah, this is an expansion that's coming out. Yeah. Cool. I believe it's...
Game tiles, extra characters.
It's not being released until now. It is coming 2016. And it's a whole new campaign setting.
Is that going straight to stores or is that going to be Kickstarted as well?
It'll be Kickstarted, I'm sure of it.
Why do they do this? They don't need to, anyway.
Because they're...
Kickstarter gripe.
This is what they do.
I don't know.
This is what they do. So that when that comes out, that's a whole new campaign setting. So a whole host of new miniatures, a whole host of new characters. But that doesn't stop you from using the characters from this when that comes out.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, yeah, which is really good. There is actually another expansion. I was trying to find it, but for some reason I can't find it.
Are they going to downgrade Zazu's abilities?
I think there'll be another whole host of new characters.
Forever about that.
Here it is. Arcadia Quest Beyond the Grave, which is a mini expansion for this version.
All right, so we've got Inferno, Beyond the Grave.
Yep.
So it's two expansions coming.
Beyond the Grave is out.
Okay.
And that's just expands the current iteration of the game.
Yeah.
And that one basically has a more horror feel. So
that's what we want.
Skeletons, zombies, ghouls, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then there are brand new tiles and quests and a couple of heroes, that sort of thing. So in typical...
A Zippo lighter and some new guild cards, perhaps?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. Yeah. 22 monster figures, that sort of thing.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, so that's an expansion. So this game has legs. If they're going to take it in their typical...
Yeah.
Cool mini or not fashion where they have multiple seasons.
They can zombicide
this.
Zombicide,
yeah.
Big time, right?
They can.
Yeah.
And, you know, Black Plague, which is coming out, they're going to do the same thing. They won't just leave it in one box set. Surely not. So there is expansion possibility here. I'd be quite happy, to be honest, with just this box set because you've got absolutely everything you need to play in it.
Yeah,
and there's lots of variation. Cool. There's 11 scenarios.
You know, I know that's the thing. I never used to be into playing the campaign within the book. So I always thought, oh, you just get through it too quick. But this is actually fun. It took us a couple of months to meet weekly just to get through it.
Yeah.
And it's engaging. So I could see myself playing through this, playing the other missions that we missed out. And then being really hungry to play an expansion pack for this. Sometimes when I played Zombicide, I'm like, oh, that was cool. But I'm not all that bothered about going to the next one just yet. I'll come back to that in a couple of weeks' time and have a game. But this one, we could just come back and play this all the time. This is like XCOM 2. You know how we just played the crap out of XCOM? Yeah. And if we've got a dry week or someone's not here, we'll just go, can you bring XCOM in? Let's play XCOM. Yeah. This is one of those sort of games, I think. So.
If you want, you can totally... strip it back, just play PvP with monsters included on there.
Collaborative games.
And just go for your own scenario. Configure the board in some way that looks like. Set it up for yourself, go for it. Don't stick to the book. It doesn't matter. You don't have to. They themselves say it's optional. You know, the titles are optional.
There's plenty of material in there to keep going with it, right?
Yep. And with the customization in which characters you can choose, which equipment you can choose, there's a lot of replayability.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
So obviously we're loving this, right?
Yeah. The amount of stuff that's in here, there's so many elements in this game that have been developed really, really well. We've totally gone over the enemy stuff. The way that the enemies move and the way that the enemies interact with you and how that's done without the use of a GM, which is like normally...
It's got a good AI.
Yeah, it's got an amazing AI.
You know what? We didn't really get into that, and which governs what the monsters react.
Mm.
So, which is, I guess if we cover that now.
So there's two components to that.
Yeah, there is.
Just to rewind a bit into how to play. Anybody?
I'm going to bring up the, no, you know, I'm going to bring up the rule word. Book. I'm going to bring up the rule book. So if you know, there's the
guard reaction,
guard reaction, and then there's the like a payback. So if you're
payback attack sort of thing,
yeah. So guard reaction is more about how you move around the board. If you move into us, it's opportunity attack. That's what it is.
Yep.
So if you move into some monster's space, which they call it close, which close, is the space immediately around them, it doesn't draw diagonally. Any effect. Not diagonally. You can't move diagonally in this game. There's no effect. However, if you ignore that monster in front of you and try to move away from them in the same turn, they wake up to this fact and they'll have a swing at you. If the person who's to your right decides that they want to attack. So even attacks are optional, which you... Yeah, why wouldn't you? So,
because you kill them, you get a coin.
That's yeah, it. That's right. So that's the guard reaction.
Yeah, and the point I was trying to drive is that there is so much gear in this book. We couldn't cover it, you know? Like,
yeah.
You know, it really is just... Get your hands on it, scope it out.
Great rule book, though, right?
Great rule book.
Yeah. So you can
There was never a question. There was never a question that we couldn't get the answer to. So it's like, well, what is meant to happen here? And it's just there's a whole blurb on it. It's just like, we're not talking pages, like just a little, like straight to the point.
What's the diagram? Show you how it works. Matt's going
to. I'm looking at the manual now because I've got it on my iPad, which you can download from directly from Kumini or not, and. Yeah, it's a vivid. Everything's there. The index helps me. I'm just looking at the index now to look up for the section on monster reactions, and bang, I'm gone straight to it. Yeah. So, which is awesome.
Yeah,
there's the guard reaction. Then there's a payback reaction, which is the other one. So, if you attack a monster and this monster happens to survive your first attack, it gets a chance to attack you directly. If the person, again, the player to your right, decides that they want to attack. So they can always, they move first. So if they need to move to get to you, say you're using a ranged attack, they can move whatever their movement allowance is. In a lot of cases, I think it's only one space. So they move closer to you.
It's on the monster card. It is on the monster card.
Yeah, they move closer to you, and then they conduct an attack that's listed on their card. Some of the higher level monsters have extra effects, and it might be that every crit symbol they roll equals an extra 2 hits, that sort of thing. So that's resolved. You get defense against that, and then play continues with the next activation, whoever's turn it is. So it doesn't bog you down in technical combat with the enemies. It reacts to your movement, the way you're playing, hits you for damage or ignores you, and then play moves on to the next player. So...
There we go, listener. Pretend you heard that like about 15 minutes ago. Yeah. Right in the middle of how to play.
Look, I think it's a good sign. It's a sign of a very good game that we really enjoy if we babble about it, to be honest. I think if we're into the point where we're talking incoherently because we're just so excited about the game, it's worth a looking at. It really is worth looking at.
And this is a table of gamers. I took this home on a Friday night. Yeah. The wife invited two of her non-gaming friend, like a couple, over. Bang, I've got this out. They played it, loved it, and it's just, it's easy to get into.
It's super cool. It's really,
and we all enjoyed it as well.
It's really nice. It's a good looking thing on a table, especially if you put the extra effort in to paint the pieces, which is something that's pretty open. I always wanted this kind of game coming from a 40K tabletop warfare sort of thing. Like,
I agree.
I always wanted a game that would mix the elements of a pen and paper RPG and a tabletop, like, Warhammer style game, because I was like, look at these space marines, they're all about so much stuff, you know, they've got all this like lore and history behind them, but you never ever got that when you were like rolling, you know, 100 d6 and measuring out tape measures and all that sort of stuff.
Little did you know, you just had to write a Fisher and Paykel and ask.
The Arcadia Quest sort of manages to put a really, really good looking game, because that was a massive reason why I played 40K. Like,
it looks exactly.
So good, you know, like, man, everything about this game looks amazing. Games Workshop, P2A, LTD. and then you've got this Arcadia Quest, which sort of mixes in just enough of the stuff you need to care about and onto this really good looking tabletop game. So. I'm just super happy with it.
Yeah.
All the elements are pretty spot on. There's just...
Yeah. One of the other things I liked about was the spawning mechanic. We alluded to it, but I didn't explain it. Mm. So there's a track. Every time you kill a monster, it goes onto this track, and there are five spaces on this track. Once all five spaces are filled, then there is a spawning happening. So there's an opportunity for those monsters that have just been killed to spawn back onto the game board, which is really good because if there are tokens out on the board, which are the spawn points, and you roll two dice, and if you get the correct combination, the monster will spawn there. However, if the tile is full, and that means it's got two characters on there already, it goes back to the box. It's dead. If it can't be placed because the die roll doesn't match any of the spawn tokens, it's dead. It goes back to the box. So you never know quite whether this monster's going to come back and piss you off or whether it's going to go to the box and you're never going to see it again. I really think that's clever because...
Yeah. It's a little bit different to the zombie side.
It's very different.
Point,
yeah.
And you roll to see if they're going to appear or not. Yeah.
Well, with the spawn point, in Zombicide, for example, they're coming from the box directly, whereas this is the opposite effect. They're going from the board. They might go back to the box or they might come back onto the board. Yeah, I really like that.
Yeah, and you stated clever, and that seems to be the theme throughout. This game's really clever. It's really fun. It's quite whimsical. Matt.
Yeah.
You tell us all the rules. What do you think about it?
What do I think about it?
What do you think about the game?
I agree with David in that he was able to introduce it to to Travis and to non-gamers, and they were able to pick it up and enjoy the game pretty quickly. It's the kind
and
of
usually
thing,
those sort of games, when it's on a table, when we're all playing it, we can get sick of those games real quick. Because we just think, it's too simple. It's all right, but it's too simple. Yeah. We've done it. Walk away. Right?
There's depth.
But there's depth to this.
I'm looking forward to... I'm really hoping I can pick up a copy of this myself so that when my boys get old enough, this is how I would introduce them to this, to gaming. Because it is the gateway... it's a little bit more complicated than a gateway game. But it is a way into the world of RPG and the world of more complicated
way through a dungeon and achieving something.
So I love it. I'd definitely give it two swords.
Yeah. It's not a gateway game, but it can be. And that's the coolest thing. This game is so freaking versatile. Yeah. You can do whatever you want with it. You could sit it down with a bunch of vets that, are all about being, the highest of high elves as soon as they're sitting down at a table and they're not, Bob from accounting. And they want to be that bird. And you can use this whole box to be that.
You're saying. If you could just co-op all of this stuff into your own dungeon crawling adventure.
It's a really rock solid box of stuff.
You know what? I'd like to see that. I'd like to see some tiles come out which have got them, a hook onto the side of this, but it's got outdoor stuff. So you actually have to come into a building or something like that. That'd be cool, right?
I'm not 100% sure because I didn't look into it, but I think that it's an expansion, but the new iteration of the game does include
different
external environments. Look, it's great.
Right,
I think we should blob there.
All right. So before we get into Matt's quiz, then we got one more comment come through. I posted just before we started recording, just saying, hey, anybody got? I said, is anything you want to ask, say, or rave about Arcadia Quest? We're recording till 8:30. Well, it's 8:45 now. So. Any comments would be cool. So we've heard from the Meat Axe. Also, Scott Free got in touch. Very insightful comment here, guys. Think about this and respond as you feel necessary. He said, I've never heard of this thing. That is my comment.
Well, now you have.
There's Justin. Matt?
Yeah.
He got two likes for that already.
What a champ.
Yeah, what a champ. Thanks, Scott.
Well, you're just not spending enough time in store.
That's Seven Land Hand's social media update.
Yeah, that's right.
Before we blow, I think it's important. We're going to be wrapping this up with Nates and Toys and...
Matt's quiz is up next.
Matt's quiz, totally.
Yeah. Back to an old format we love. Yeah. No more tears.
No more tears
for you guys.
What are you going to say, Justin?
I think it's important to note RRP as soon as we go any further. This game's $160.
Standard, yeah.
Standard.
Yeah. Hey, but listener, stick around for Nates
and
Toys.
Stick around for how we can help you with that.
As the Sugar Cube said, stick around for joy.
Right on.
There's a reference no one will know. You were probably four by the time that reference came out.
Great. We'll branch that later, but I think it's very important to put it out there. That, hey guys, this game's absolutely excellent, but it is probably the higher side of the budget.
Yeah. But it's the high side of the budget, but you're not wasting your time with it. it's not one of those where you're going to sink a bunch of cash. And then, I mean, we were coming out of here raving about it and just talking about it. And people outside in the shop, because we're playing in the RPG room on the side of the shop, we're just going, that does sound good. I've heard a little bit about this. And just clear the shelves of them, right? So we'll get back to that later on.
Oh, awesome. Fantastic.
But, yeah, it's
I just wanted to set the standard in case that guy, like, about to get out of his car and go order it.
Yeah. If Aaron Graham was here, he would put it on the higher level of the game category style.
The higher level here at RTRFM.
Yeah.
3 o'clock in the morning.
All right, let's blow up and do a Matt's quiz. Hopefully it's not total insanity. Matt's quiz. Sort of party time, sort of excellent.
Oh, that was good.
Thanks,
well,
man.
Done.
That was straight off the CD.
Well, guess what? You're not far wrong, because we're playing Arcadia Quest. Tonight we're going to be doing the Arcadia Quiz. A bunch of questions loosely linked to Core Mini or Not's Arcadia Quest. So I've gone back to the original format because it worked. It was true. We had fun. No more crying, David. No more tears, Justin.
And
no more complaining, Riley.
Oh, wait a minute. I was definitely complaining.
You drove him out of the country.
And tearful.
It wasn't even immigration.
It was my quiz.
Sick of the mad rules.
All right.
Okay.
Question number one. There are seven questions. Name another Eric M. Lang board game design other than Arcadia Quest or XCOM.
Oh, don't say XCOM.
Come on, man.
XCOM was the one.
No. There was no more tears.
Well, you've already mentioned it in the thing.
Oh, yeah, man. Question two.
Oh, all right. Really?
I don't have any idea.
Come on, Eric M. Lang. He's a prolific designer.
He's done everything. Yeah. But you know what? When I was going,
you know one.
I was trying to go back over what I thought. Maybe he did this. Maybe he did that. And every time I guessed it, it wasn't. I thought Small World. Maybe that feels like an Eric M. Lang.
No Philippe Dijonneur or whatever it is.
There's only one Lang.
I think I know one.
Well, that puts you 1 point in front of Justin, doesn't it? Question two: The Rock played an Arcadian warrior in which movie prequel spin-off to the Mummy trilogy that does not star Brendan Fraser?
What?
Oh, really? Right. Was he in the one with Brendan Fraser?
The Rock played an Arcadian warrior in which movie prequel or spin-off to the Mummy trilogy that does not star Brendan Fraser?
Oh, man, I don't... really? No, that's not right.
Pretty
that's
sure animated.
I know. You know it. Everyone knows it.
Starring Rock Johnson.
Question three.
Okay. I'm making up movie names here, I think.
Well, that's half the fun.
Yeah, okay.
Question
I've got
three.
An answer.
According to Greek mythology, Arcadia was a virgin wilderness, home to which god and his court of dryads, nymphs, and other nature spirits?
I did read about this in the bloody... For research for the intro. That's right, listener. I do research for the beginning, just so I can take the piss out of something.
We just don't slap this together. Yeah. So if you're playing it along at home, according to Greek mythology, Arcadia was a virgin wilderness, home to which god and his court of dryads, nymphs, and other nature spirits.
And for some reason, I couldn't make fun of that. So I didn't include it in the intro.
No.
Okay.
Question four. Is Arcadia Waters the legendary home of the Fountain of Youth, the fabled drinking water source of the Delphian oracles, or a chain of aged care lifestyle villages?
Right. Oh.
Multiple choice. Is Arcadia Waters the legendary home of the Fountain of Youth, the fabled drinking water source of the Delphian oracles, or a chain of aged care lifestyle villages?
Right.
Which one?
Solid.
Question five. Here is your clue. These girls on film were from the planet Earth and were hungry as wolves. Can you name
the band? Yeah!
Can you name the band?
Just as well I didn't say.
And in the answer,
how old was I for this one?
And in the answer,
cheat.
I'll tell
Justin's
you
looking at my
how
piss
it relates.
So,
no cheating, Justin.
Don't worry, I can't read this right in the right way up.
Number five, hear that clue again. These girls on film were from the planet Earth and were as hungry as wolves.
Don't know what that's got to do with Arcadia Quest, but that's locked
I'll
in.
Tell you,
I've got
I'll tell you what it has
clues.
To do.
Enough clues. Moving right along. Number six.
No, I'll tell you what the answer.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Question six. In the Resident Evil movie Extinction, Alice and her merry band discovered the existence of a place called Arcadia somewhere in Alaska. A land promising a rich zombie-free lifestyle and all the baby seal meat you can eat. What shocking truth is revealed about Arcadia in Resident Evil Afterlife, which was the sequel?
Yeah, that's a solid. That's so, a solid nil answer.
it's my typical movie one. In the Resident Evil movie Extinction, Alice discovered the existence of a place called Arcadia somewhere in Alaska. What was the shocking truth revealed about Arcadia in Resident Evil Afterlife? All right, that's question six. One more to go.
Yeah, seven.
Okay, number seven. Which of the following is not a successful Cool Mini or Not Kickstarter game?
So it didn't get published.
Well, I'll go through the list.
Okay,
of the following is not a successful Cool Mini or Not Kickstarter game?
Successful as in didn't get funded?
That's what I mean. That's what I was asking. What the?
Yeah, exactly right. Yep. Take it any way you like.
That's what I was meaning. Well, no, you've got to set the requirement of what's not successful. Because I could say I didn't think that this Cool Mini or Not, this such and such Cool Mini or Not game wasn't successful because I didn't get pleasure from it.
I could be setting you up.
So what's the requirement? All right, here we go. There had to be one.
All right, here are the games.
Yeah.
Besieged.
Oh, that was rubbish.
Rum and Bones.
Rubbish.
Blood Rage.
Not worth the money.
Dogs of War.
No.
Arcadia Quest.
Cats of War was better. Arcadia Quest definitely existed.
The World of Smog. Xenoshift.
God, so many.
Zombicide Black Plague.
Yeah.
Zombicide Season 1, 2, and 3. Wrath of Kings. Chaos Ball.
What? You spoil that for three.
River Wars.
Right.
The Others, Seven Sins. Guilds of Cadwallon.
So many.
Relic Knights and Sedition Wars.
Right. Just for clarification, all of those are Cool Mini or Not games, but one of them is not being successful.
Correct.
Cool.
I did only one of them. Oh, I was going to say.
Yeah,
all
I did
of
say
the
which
above.
Of the following is only one.
Oh, man.
So, why Besieged.
Such a long list.
Yeah, just out of interest, how many are on that list?
Yeah.
18.
That's not a piss take at you.
Yeah.
That's a piss take at Cool Mini or Not. Why do you need 18 Kickstarter campaigns when you've got
exactly.
all those successful except for one? You don't need my money anymore.
You want to hear about Blood Rage, my friend.
My God.
17 of these games were successful. One of them was not.
Okay.
But hey, guys, we just need your support.
But I could
to
be fucking
make our game,
yeah,
you know, struggling. Reality. You know, starving artists and all that sort of jazz, yeah. Bros.
That's a rant for another time. Let's go back to the answers, shall we?
Yeah.
I've just got to...
do you want the list again?
No, I don't want the list again, for crying out loud. I just got to remember one of them that I haven't seen on the shelf somewhere. One of them could be on the shelf, though, but it wasn't successful on Kickstarter. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Because they had the money to fund it anyway.
Yeah, so this went, put all this work into it.
It's like the fat cats, like, we didn't get them this time, boys.
I'm putting Arcadia Quest down, because it might be a trick. Because he said he listed all that stuff.
I'm giving away.
He listed all that crap that you can get.
Which of the following is not a successful Cool Mini or Not Kickstarter game? Besieged, Rum and Bones, Blood Rage, Dogs of War, I'm going to make you pay, Arcadia Quest, The World of Smog, Xenoshift, Zombicide, Black Plague, Zombicide, Any Season.
What have you got for question one?
Wrath of Kings, Chaos Ball, River Wars, The Others, Guilds of Cadwallon, Relic Knights, Sedition Wars.
I'm getting so mad. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. No, I know.
I love it.
We're going to have to... Oh, I keep saying it. We're going to have a Kickstarter section and start moaning about this.
Kickstarter wins? This new Kickstarter.
Get into this. Guess what? Get into this game. It's cool. But guess what? Come on, Cool Mini and Night have done another freaking game.
All right.
Same mechanics, different miniatures.
As much as you take the piss out of Matt, he does put a lot of effort in, and this is a cool quiz. I dig
F and O.
This is all right. Right.
Answers for us.
All right. Number one.
Yeah.
Name another Eric M. Lang game other than Arcadia Quest or XCOM.
I said Zombicide.
I went with Blood Rage.
Both wrong.
Justin, you are wrong.
Yes.
David, you are correct.
Yeah.
Blood Rage. Yeah. I would have also accepted Dice Masters, Quarriors, Chaos Ball, Call of Cthulhu, the card game, Star Wars, card game, Warhammer 40,000 Conquest, and they're just his notable ones.
Yeah,
this guy's becoming more as prolific as Rainer Knizia, you know?
The
guy who shits board games.
Mr. Knizia.
The guy who shits board games. All right. Number two. The Rock played an Arcadian warrior in which movie prequel to the Mummy trilogy?
First,
what do you think, David?
Is it Scorpion? The Scorpion King?
What do you think, Justin?
I said the same. Scorpion.
It is the Scorpion King.
Good. I felt like I invented that name.
I wrote Hercules first, and that's I was like, wait a minute.
That's what I did. Did you hear me
What's
say?
That got to do with
oh,
the Mummy?
That's animated. Yeah, yeah. I did the same. I went Hercules. No, wait a minute. That was a cartoon.
They
remade it twice.
Did they?
Yeah.
The Hercules that he was in wasn't bad. It wasn't great, but it wasn't bad.
Right.
Because it's The Rock. They can't make like an instant four star.
Okay, right. Question three. According to Greek mythology, Arcadia was a virgin wilderness. Which, what was the name of the god?
Okay, look, I have a different answer. I knee-jerked Zeus, and then I went with Prometheus. Because I thought it was a P name.
Justin? I only knew Zeus. I don't really know.
You didn't
Greek
write
gods.
Anything down, because you showed me your answers.
I got nothing.
For our Greek mythology buffs out there, it's Pan.
Oh, I told you it was a P word, didn't I?
Pan.
Pan.
Yeah, research. Yep. All right. I don't know what Prometheus is.
Right. Labyrinth.
Question four. Is Arcadia Waters the legendary home of the Fountain of Youth, the fabled drinking water source of the Delphian Oracles, or a chain of aged care lifestyle villages?
It's
Justin.
Three, man. I was actually going to call it out.
It is actually. Arcadia Waters is a chain of aged care lifestyle villages. Yeah, there is one in Mannington.
Right. To our elderly listeners, I hope you're enjoying
yourself.
Girls
on film. I'm hungry like the wolf.
Yeah. I have no idea who this band
this
is.
This is Planet Earth, yeah.
When what year was this band prolific?
84, 85.
Yeah. I wasn't even born yet.
Oh, well. You're at a disadvantage.
Yeah. Scrubbed
I knew disadvantage, I needed to get born earlier so I'd be able to get this right in 2015.
What is it, David?
Duran Duran,
yes. Yeah. And the reason why it's important is because three members of Duran Duran started a spin-off band called Arcadia. There you go.
Right.
I did say it was loosely. See, I always say it's loosely.
The effort, ladies and gentlemen, that Matthew goes into.
Right. Question six. The Resident Evil movie Extinction, Alice, located somewhere, a place called Arcadia, somewhere in Alaska. What was the secret truth?
I can't imagine this
because,
is a one-word answer.
Because it was a Resident Evil game, I went full of raccoons, because Raccoon City is like the Roji city where stuff goes bad.
You are so fucking wrong.
Damn.
It was a secret chemical plant.
You are closer. You're a hell of a lot closer.
The T-virus or whatever it is?
Arcadia, the USS Arcadia, was a ship collecting survivors for unethical experimentation by the Umbrella Corp.
I told you it wouldn't be one
Umbrella
answer.
Corp.
Right.
So it wasn't, it was a ship floating around the ocean. Have you seen
lost.
The movie?
No.
No.
Oh. Jesus Christ.
All right. Girls on film.
Number seven. Which of the following is not a successful Call Mini or not Kickstarter game? Did you have an answer?
That girls on film video, right, when I'm 13 years old and I catch on Rage at night.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of nudity in there.
All right,
full frontal.
YouTube, let's do it.
Yeah.
Okay, instead of reading that whole list out again, I said the smog one.
I went Rum and Bones.
You're both incorrect. Good. They were both successfully Kickstarter games.
Right.
The answer...
Zombicide 1.
No, it was the others, Seven Sins, because it hasn't been released on Kickstarter yet.
Oh.
It actually gets released tonight.
The trickiest dude.
I said that during the question. I said that.
Yes, you did, and
yet.
I thought you'd write it down.
No.
Yeah, it's actually released tonight, the Kickstarter.
Cool. So, Cool Mini or not...
Don't fund it until...
Cool Mini or not, do they need your money?
No.
This is a real. This should be a 60-minute.
I thought you were going to come back to this, so I deliberately set it up. Do they need the money? No. So what they're doing? They're pre-funding games. That's what they're doing. They're pre-funding their games.
And they're selling it for RRP.
And people are going for it. It drives me nuts.
I know, but I can't.
What are you doing?
But when you see all the stretch goals, they're kind of cool, right? That's what you're getting, isn't it?
Well, if you get on board, it is worth it. What the problem I think Cool Mini and I are facing is that. They're getting the products out on the shelves sometimes, or in a lot of cases, before the backers are actually getting their product,
which is
pissing people off.
Yeah, yeah.
And their customer service is another thing which is a little bit to the bizarre. I've told you the story.
Yeah.
It's taken me 3 months to get a replacement Mini because one of the products I bought from them, the Mini was incorrect. So I contacted them. 3 months later, someone's finally gotten back to me. And I assume they're going to send it out to me because they asked for my shipping address, but I haven't had any confirmation that they're going to do it yet. So that's my gripe with Cool Mini or Not, is their customer service is a little bit shit.
The important thing about Kickstarter, like, it's a big thing in video games as well because people sort of overstep their place as a Kickstarter backer. There's been issues where people think that they own part of the game, like... they sort of make demands on development and all that sort of stuff. Like, it should be out now. Like, I should be able to get my access to demos and all that sort of stuff. But really, you need to look after, like, you need to look after those backers. Like, the whole reason you're printing the game is because Matt spent the time at 3 o'clock in the morning with his credit card in his hand.
Yeah, go and click.
Making that thing happen. So, you know, to hear stories like people, you know, people able to buy the game off the shelf before they can get it in their mailbox, ridiculous. Like, you should just, you know.
Well, I bought Rue Morgue from here in Australia, all right? And people, backers, still hadn't received it at the date that I bought it.
Brutal. And whether it's an issue with production, like they haven't got all the extra bits done up yet, or maybe they do it later, like, it's just, yeah, it's pretty silly. But I always thought...
What's the difference? Sorry, finish your point.
I always thought Kickstarter was just a spot for startups. Like,
exactly,
Kickstarter.
We've never heard of you before.
Yeah.
You've got a great idea. I want to fund you and support you getting that idea out there.
Yeah, like, you know, the funny ones are sort of like, you know, the Esky with the radio in it, or, you know, that also has a blender in the top so you can make frozen cocktails and stuff.
Or the Mama and Papa board game development team in far north Queensland trying to get their first game out there. You know, that sort of thing. But
it sparks innovation as well, because something that doesn't meet what gaming publishers are looking for, that fits a certain mold, that they're not really wanting to take a risk on other things, but people out there might go, you know what, I like the idea of that. I'm going to give it a crack. You know, they watch the video, it looks pretty good fun, and it gets out there. That could just set someone up gangbusters. Yep. They could be making games for a long while, but they're not going to get a look in with a regular publisher. But they're also not going to get a look in when you've got a beautifully polished, cool mini or not box with fantastic artwork, awesome minis, and then they're asking for similar kind of money as something that's got a cool game mechanic, but, you know, this guy down the road who's the best artist that you know on the street is drawing everything for you. It doesn't look quite as polished.
Low rent.
But those are the sort of guys that need the leg up.
Yeah, it just sort of... It makes me wonder, though, like, on the other side of the coin, maybe Cool Mini or Not don't have the resources to do good marketing, and Kickstarter does it all for them.
Yeah, well, that's true.
But
it's
not always
platform.
Cool Mini or Not. Usually they're attached to... Guillotine Games.
No, Guillotine Games for Zombicide. This is...
Fireside?
No, it was another, I can't remember.
Yeah.
But they're associated. They are the main signatory to the game, okay? And then there's always they're the producer.
Yeah.
And then there's the developer. So Guillotine Games is the developer. Cool Mini or Not is the producer.
It's like, hey, we've designed this game, this is how it works. It'd be good to have some cool minis in there.
Yeah.
Cool Mini or Not. Add in your stuff.
Well, I remember when Cool Mini or Not were just pretty much start up themselves, and it was just a platform for showing off the minis that your creativity.
It's like thumbs up, thumbs down.
Yeah. Mm. So, you know, I've
it's not all about Cool Mini or Not. There's other people.
Do you
doing
love their products?
Well. Yeah.
Yeah. They put a lot of effort into their work.
Like I said, I've liked them since they were just like a crappy website, and I was buying their stuff off just
too.
To paint it.
Their customer service thing aside, the fact that they're using Kickstarter as a pre-sale thing for games, they've got seven. The other Seven Sins starts tonight. Now, Zombicide Black Plague has only finished a month or two ago, and Blood Rage finished a month or two before that. So they've constantly got this stream of games. It seems that every quarter they're putting out a new game. So four games coming out a year, and then they set their task completion for anywhere from 6 to 12 months before the backers get their thing after the campaign's complete.
I'm sure it's going to be beneficial for them. What's the difference between selling a game wholesale and sending it en masse to a distribution center somewhere in a country, as opposed to selling it for retail price and getting all that money yourself and then having to ship it to someone, some guy independently?
Yeah.
I'm sure you're making more money with the Kickstarter approach, where you're selling it for retail, plus all the add-ons, you know, that you buy. Say if it's a $100 game, and you go, oh, and you can buy this other miniature for $12. It's like, oh, so for 10% of the whole game, I can add this one, and surely they're making the cut on that, you know?
Like, I'm sure
it's better for them.
I don't know what my problem with it is. It just sounds super skeezy. Like, it's like, dude, why? Like, come on, man, 17 games, all successful Kickstarters. And, you know, you don't put those prices out there not to make money, right?
No.
You know, if you want 300 grand for whatever,
I think you've got it. What feels bad about it is it's taking the money out of other new developer game designers or other.
I think it's dragging the attention. Like,
big slews of money too. You know.
Yeah, yeah. Because you can get other games for like $25 will get you in on some games. Where these are always going to be 100 and something.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm. Maybe yeah. So look forward to. I guess we're looking into what's hot on Kickstarter, and maybe that's something we'll start talking about in future shows.
Well, I've been a complete Kickstarter whore as far as this conversation is concerned, because I've got, was it Rue Morgue or Black Plague? I think I've got Black Plague. And I'm getting Blood Rage as well.
But did you get it?
Not yet. Yeah. But Blood Rage isn't a cool mini or not, is it?
Yeah.
It is.
Yes. Yeah.
It was in the quiz.
Yep. Eric Lang.
Of course it was.
Yep.
All right, forget I said that.
Not just because it was Eric Lang. Eric Lang was just the designer, but it was put out by Cool Mini or Not. So, yeah, look forward to those. Maybe we can bring some attention to some of those littler projects on Kickstarter that we can speak to.
Let's
you know, I've backed 12 projects on Kickstarter, and each one of them successful, and I'm still waiting for a few of those to come in. But they're not the run-of-the-mill games. Like, I haven't gone for the big, glitzy one. I've gone for some of the little ones.
The board game hipster, right here.
Yeah. The other day I was flicking through it, one of them said, hey, one of the things we might do is have a short story attached to this written by a proper author, right?
Yeah.
So I got in touch with a guy and said, hey, I'm a writer. How did the short story thing go? And he said, oh, tell me a bit about yourself. So I told him I was trying to get my novel off to agents in the US and publishers and all that sort of stuff.
I'm super ripped.
And he got back to me and he said, well, you know, my advice, immediately give away the novel game. Yeah, I've only just spent 4 years on this book. So
that's encouraging.
You know, we'll see. I said I'd do it for him. I said, get back in touch if you're interested. I'd just do it for free. It's just get some.
We did talk. We have talked about this before. It's time to start writing modules, games, coming up with their own RPG or something like that.
Yeah,
so,
hey,
look for Seven Land Hand Production.
Oh, we're not attaching this name. It'll drag it way down. We'll never get
Good Games Productions or whatever.
On that, listener, if you're out there and you've got an opinion, tweet it, drop it on Facebook.
That'd be good.
I guess the question being, how do you feel about the way board games on Kickstarter are going? Is it like your go-to spot when you're trying to find something new? Or are you, do you use that to browse the latest and greatest? Or are you really trying to get behind the indie stuff? Like, how are you using Kickstarter? And what do you think of people?
We'll have to get a post on the Facebook page so I get a bit of chat happening on this.
Yeah, I guess in social media circles, it's like, join the conversation.
Yeah.
Like,
all right, well, let's call that segment Matt's Quiz and Kickstarter Whinge. And
Matt's
finish off with a bit of Neats and Twos.
Neats and Twos.
All right, Neats and Twos.
Neats and Twos.
Neats and Twos.
All right, most of the Neats and Twos that have come in are all over the Battle for Zendikar cards and the release and Planeswalkers and stuff like that. So maybe as board game Seven Land Hunters, we need to lift our game a little bit. But we've just done Arcadia Quest. That's given the treat to the people.
That's our platform. That's our launching platform.
But before we move away from Battle for Zendikar, I would like to point out that for $3,150, as it stands, Noah Bradley's original oil painting for the Forest Magic Battle for the Zendikar is available on eBay. $3,150.
Wow.
Man, like...
And time left as we stand.
Crazy.
24 hours and 50 minutes.
See, that's something you...
Have you got your bid in yet?
No. I kind of want to put a bid in, but it'd be like a 3,151, and they go, sold to the highest bidder.
Jeez, how disappointed would you be if you won that one?
Oh, man, you know how much I'd love that? Oh, that'd be so good.
Battle for Zendikar. It's coming.
It's coming. And we'll cover that 2 weeks' time. We'll do that. We'll get Rob and Lyle all over that because, it'll be out by then, I think.
Then maybe we can... As your pen goes flying across the room, maybe we can find and that the argument. Of course, what would be better, 3 8-8 octopuses or what did you say?
24-1-1 signs.
Yeah. Maybe we can come
definitely
up.
Definitely the science.
I remember
for that.
Going back, the OG Zendikar had Lorthus the Tidemaker. Right? Are you familiar with this dude? He's an 8-8 for 8 octopus, and he was the boss.
Right.
I hope. Well, is there another octopus coming to Battle of Zendikar?
It's something to do with Kiora.
Oh, right on.
So Kiora's coming back.
Which is stupid.
I like Kiora.
I know, but why? There's no Battle for Zendikar vibe there.
She's pretty
and
alien looking.
In Aaron Graham Premonitions, it said no Kiora.
What, he got one wrong?
Don't be like that. It's just a glitch in the Matrix is what happened. So he'll be back to explain, you know. Yeah.
He wasn't plugged into the Animagus.
In the Neats and Twos, there was a bit of a confrontation between the Medax and the mage, Aaron Graham, which we'll probably cover next fortnight, which was it's quite good.
So, that's coming up to some ears near you.
I'm just checking my emails here. eBay just got in touch with me. Hey, you might have forgotten to take this with you. You know that old email? You know, when you've looked at something and you've had an interest and it's the Noah Bradley.
It's the worst.
You might have forgotten to bid.
Because, you know, sometimes you go on eBay and you look up some stuff that is, you know, you show and I was like, oh, how funny is this? You look up maybe like...
I could buy a Bugatti Veyron if I wanted.
Yeah, or maybe some like anime body
eBay
pillows.
Kicked me off. eBay kicked me off eBay. Because I hadn't plugged into it in quite a while. Because I forgot my password.
Yeah,
and then I didn't bother with it. And then they kicked me off. They said I can't come back.
Yeah.
Oh, so, crap, we're going along in Eats and Twos. What was your point, Justin?
The point I'm making is be careful what you search on eBay, because sometimes you get suggestions from eBay about what you should be buying on eBay, and they're not...
And you believe them.
No, they're not exactly appropriate.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so sometimes I'm like, hey, man, you know, you're just like...
How much lube can one man buy?
Okay, that's actually an example. I made a joke once. Someone was like, yeah, man, I'll just get myself a 44-gallon drum of lube. And I was like, surely that's a thing. And I found it, and it's on eBay. And then later on, I was actually looking for, like, garden furniture or something, and suggested stuff was, like, 44-gallon drums of lube. And Jed's like, why is it offering you lube all the time? And I'm like, don't worry about this, Jed.
It's just the internet. It just does these sort of things.
We water pests. Yeah. You know, I've got water plants.
Don't argue with me. I'm in IT.
Yeah.
All right. So this is what you're here for. Game of the Month special, Arcadia Quest.
Yeah. Cash money.
Good Games, Kennington, and Rockingham. Our listeners, that's you guys, 10% off Arcadia Quest. You've got to give the staff behind the password behind the counter the password, which is
Grom.
And
said exactly like that.
And get after Lord Fang. Password is
Grom.
If the game is no longer in stock, which we're pretty sure it's not at Kennington, because like we said earlier, all the listeners have gone out and bought it.
Because we're super good at our jobs. We're just flogging a man.
It's not a job. Is this a job? Who's getting paid for this? Anyway. We walked straight out of here, said, oh, this is the greatest game ever, and they all bought it. You can order it in, so tell the guys that you want it, they'll order it in. And I checked before I came in here, and Rob looked it up on the machine, the computer, and there's plenty of them that can be ordered in. So give them the password, Grom.
Excellent.
And that's only available for the next month. So that's that done. Neats and Twos, I think we're done.
Yep. The next game, you're going to break that open at the Zendikar.
We'll break it open next week.
Yeah.
But we'll announce what game we're doing when we do Battle for Zendikar.
So you'll have to listen to that one to find out what our next board game podcast is.
We don't even know.
We don't even know yet. So we'll be back in a fortnight with Seven Land Hand Extra, our magic focused podcast. We'll be tearing up the old. Tearing up the boring old lands and battling for Zendikar. It's full art lands from now on, guys.
Yeah. I'm pumped. I'm pumped about the full art lands.
What, every set from now on?
Well, yeah. Well, for because Zendikar, you just buy all the fat packs you can now.
Oh, you mean in deck. Okay, I thought you were trying to tell me.
Oh, sorry. No.
I'm never going to go back to the old ones.
I'm just going to be like buying all the fat packs I can, throwing out all my old basic lands.
Yeah. Light them on fire.
Have a bit of a bonfire, and it's just going to be
unless
full art
lands. Betas or something like that. I don't go crazy. Or
I keep those. Yeah.
OG Zendis or whatever. Yeah. I don't get nuts.
I'll get rid of all my Theros and Ravnica ones for these.
Well, they're pretty good. No, you can't burn lands. It's all
we're
good
not,
stuff.
Oh, no, we're not really going to burn any lands.
Unless you're playing red aggro, then you can burn as many lands as you want.
Oh, all right, enough of that. It's time to leave.
I'd like to thank Justin for coming up, playing games with us, giving us his point of view and his personal opinions, which I guess is the same thing each time. And David, thanks for twerking the knobs, twiddling the dials, and tweaking the buttons on the computer.
I almost threw a pelvis out. It was terrible, yeah.
You should see him, actually. It's funny. He's twerking over the keyboard, pressing it with his butt cheeks.
Oh, yeah.
It gets pretty wild in here. And, I want to relive my favourite moment from Arcadia Quest because you're indulging me here. If you want to be a prick to everybody, PvP is the way to go. You can just totally screw with your fellow players, like I did. I cast a wind spell and I managed to get David's character in between the rock and the hard place that he so much deserves, in where he couldn't possibly get out without fighting his way. And even then, it would have been pretty impossible for him to get out. So if you want to play Arcadia Quest, you want to be a jerk, I encourage you to do so. It's the perfect platform for that. That's all.